Okay, we're in the book of Esther. King Ahasuerus. I got to do a little review. It's been, you know, I haven't taught this in 3 weeks, and then it was another 2 weeks before that. So I got to let's review the book. King Ahasuerus, who's also known in history as Xerxes the First. He divorces his first wife. He'd been having one of these drinking parties with his friends, hundreds of his friends, all of his leaders. And he came up with this wild idea that he wanted to have Vashti come out and display her beauty. Now, exactly what that means, you have all kinds of wild ideas in the commentaries, various ideas. Who knows what it is? She doesn't want to do it for whatever reason. Oh, while we were in Russia, I packed on my iPad 2 movies of the Book of Esther. I'm just like so disappointed. Why can't somebody make a movie about a Bible book and just stick to the text? Why did they have to make up all this stuff, you know? Oh my gosh, one of them made it sound like it was all about politics and, you know, I don't know. It's just where they get this stuff. Sorry, poor Drew had to hear me complain about this on the trip. I was thinking that, you know, after we did the Book of Esther, I'd have a movie night and I'd show you one of these movies. And it's like both of them, it was like, no, I can't do that. I should have showed you the movies before we taught, and then we'll blow up the movie as we go through the, oh well. So anyway, she refuses. He dumps her. It's after this that we know by history that he goes off to fight his grand battles with the Greeks. Big, big deal in history. This is ancient history 101, the battle between the Persians and the Greeks. And after he was defeated, because he was eventually defeated, you know, the movie 300, the big battle at Marathon, the battle at Thermopylae, with King Leonidas and his 300. You know, we make this big deal that they held them off, but only for a couple of days, and then they're all dead. And so the Persians did go on in advance and got pretty far before the Greeks rallied and then pushed them back. And then eventually, Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, he's eventually defeated. And when he returns home, he returns to an empty palace because he had kicked Vashti to the curb. His counselors advise him that he needs to hold a beauty contest. And a young gal named Esther, a young Jewish gal, she wins the position of queen. And even that's just hilarious in the movies, how they do that. It's just one of them is because she was one of his secret readers that read to him bedtime stories. It's like, where'd you get this? Just, okay. Sorry. It's been a while since I've taught, so I've got to learn to stay on track. Okay, no rabbit trails here. Okay. She wins the position of queen. She is an orphan, and she has been raised by her cousin, Mordecai. We see a brief incident where Mordecai uncovers a plot to assassinate King Ahasuerus. The assassins are arrested. They're put to death. And the record of this help from Mordecai is entered into the royal record, but nothing else is done. We saw that the king promotes a man named Haman the Agagite. We believe that he is a descendant of the Amalekites, who were an ancient enemy of the Jews, going way back to the book of Exodus. The king orders everyone to bow when they meet Haman. That's part of, in fact, he's kind of, in a sense, the prime minister. But Mordecai, because he's a Jew, he refuses to bow because it's against his religion. He only bows to nobody. He bows to nobody but God. Haman is enraged, and he decides that this is his chance to wipe out the Jewish race. And so he tricks Ahasuerus. He tricks the king into signing a decree that will have all the Jews wiped out. But he doesn't say it this way. He just says there's a certain people that are not very good for the kingdom. And this certain people we have to wipe out. It's not till later on that they find out that he's talking about the Jews. And at the time, neither the king nor Haman know that Esther is one of these Jews. So that's part of the whole plot. When Mordecai finds out about Haman's death decree, the cousin Mordecai, he asks Esther to intercede for the king, with the king. And he says this famous verse, "For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" How do you know that this isn't your reason for being here? Now, there is a problem in Esther's way. Under Persian law, if anyone comes into the king's presence without being invited, they could face instant death unless the king holds out his golden scepter. That's just the laws of the throne room. You don't come into the king's presence unless you're invited. And the strange thing, and this will come up tonight, she hasn't seen her husband for 30 days. So these movies that make the Esther and Ahasuerus is the big love story, it's just like, I'm just having a hard time seeing it. I don't know. But that's just me. Esther asks everyone to fast and pray for 3 days, and she will go out to see the king. And she says that famous line. She says, "If I perish, I perish. I'm going to do this. And if I die, I die." Now, the last study we did 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we saw some amazing things happen as God begins to deliver the Jews from Haman. And remember, we mentioned way back at the beginning of the book, the word God, the name of the Lord, is not in the book at all. Some people say, well, this shouldn't be in the Bible because it never mentions God's name, never mentions God. But friends, you see his fingerprints all through this. She asks everybody to fast, and things start happening. First, Esther invites King Ahasuerus and Haman to a private banquet. And at the banquet, instead of bringing up the problem, she simply invites them back to a second banquet. And we're all kind of going, you know, oh, just come out with it, girl. No, she slows it down. She's, you know, waiting for the right time. Haman is very excited to be honored in this way. And he's so excited, he even begins to make plans to have Mordecai put to death. Because he just knows, this is my time. Look at this. I'm the guy. And that night, the king can't sleep. That same night, after the banquet, the king can't sleep. And he stays up all night. And he asks his servants to read to him. He can't find anything on late night TV. He tries, and he doesn't get anything. And so he asks somebody to start reading to him. So they pull out some books, some old dusty books, and start reading the records of the kingdom. And they come across the story of how Mordecai, they just happened to come across the story of how Mordecai failed the assassination plot. And Ahasuerus says, by the way, whatever happened to that guy? Did anybody ever say thank you to that guy? And the servants go, well, there's nothing in the record about it. I guess we kind of forgot about that one. Early that morning, Haman is about to ask the king to have Mordecai put to death. When the king asks Haman what he should do for someone he wants to honor. Now, Haman thinks he's the one that's going to get honored, because right now, all he can think about is himself. But instead, the king asks Haman to put on a parade and parade Mordecai around town and tell everybody what a great guy Mordecai is. So, as you know, he doesn't ask if he can put Mordecai to get to death. He kind of figures that one out for himself. Then comes the second banquet. All this happens between these banquets. And Esther reveals that she and her people have been under a death threat by Haman. And I'm sure he swallows really hard at that moment, thinking, oh my gosh. And the king promptly has Haman executed. Haman goes from thinking he's the king's best friend to being hanged on the very gallows that he expected to have Mordecai's body hanged on. But the book's not over. You and I might think, well, that's the end of the story, and then they all lived happily ever after. Gang, we got 3 more chapters. Don't miss that. That's part of tonight. Verse 1, chapter 8. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So he gives Esther control of all of Haman's lands and properties. He puts it all in her inbox. And she tells him about Mordecai, that they're cousins. And I kind of find that amazing that all these, this time, I mean, Mordecai is not a guy who's trying to make a quick buck. If I was her cousin, I would be selling souvenirs or something, you know, outside. I'd say, here's Esther's baby toys, you know, or something, or selling her autographs or something. Nobody even knows that they're connected. Verse 2. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, gave it to Mordecai, and Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now, and keep in mind, Mordecai is not only Esther's cousin, but he's also the guy that thwarted the plot. All this is all fresh news. And so Mordecai now becomes the new prime minister of Persia. Persia is modern Iran. The modern nation of Iran camps out on the center of where Persia was. Persia expanded way, way bigger than modern Iran. But the Iranians call themselves Persians. They sit on the center of the Persian Empire. And considering how lately the Iranians have this thing about how they're going to annihilate the Zionists, ain't it just hilarious that King Ahasuerus promotes that Jew, Mordecai, to be the prime minister? I just get a kick out of that. Verse 3, now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman the Agagite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king. Now, when you're reading through this quickly, you kind of think this is all happening boom, 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 boom. You know, they have Haman put to death. You know, they turn, give her all the property. She hands the keys over to Mordecai. He gets the ring. And by the way, will you please save my people? And that's not exactly what's happening. Why? What's the deal with golden scepter? Because we're starting a new page, a new chapter. And there's a little time in between when Haman is put to death and when this new request comes. And in fact, I'll show in a few minutes, it could be a month or two. This is a new meeting between Esther and the king. She's putting her life once again in her own hands. And once again, she hasn't been with her hubby for a little while. And she comes into his presence and he once again holds out the golden scepter. Just because Haman is dead doesn't mean that the threat to the Jews is gone. Because they had passed a law that by the end of the year, there will be a day when we will get to wipe out all the Jews. And that law is still in existence, even though Haman is gone. Verse 5. And she said, Esther 8, verse 5. And she said, if it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen? She wants to just kind of, can we just erase these laws? Some of us might have just been happy with the idea of something's not right. It could be that check the wall connection. There we go. Some of us might have just been happy that Haman was done, dead and gone, and we check that off of our list to do and say we're done. But Esther knows this isn't all that needs to be done. She has to save her people still. Things are left to be done. Haman's original death threat is still in effect. I don't know about you, I seem to be much better at starting things than finishing them. How about you? Are you a finisher or are you a starter? Or maybe you do both. I don't know. I guess some of us can't get off the dime and can't even get started. I kind of can get that sometimes. But it seems like I start so many things and I don't finish them. You know, when Jesus told the parable of the talents, the servants that were entrusted with certain amounts of money to watch over, this is what happens in the parable. His Lord said to this servant, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." I was thinking about this today. I know I'm making a little bit too much about a word that's in italics. But he didn't just say, "Well, good to see you. Come and have a seat." He says, "Well done." Not "well started." "Well done." "Well done." Paul writes to the Colossians, "Say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord, that you may fulfill it." Finish it. Somebody named Manuel Diotte wrote this. "In my sophomore year of high school, the class was scheduled to run the mile. I will always remember the day because due to the swelling and scars from surgery on my leg, for 2 solid years I had not worn shorts. I was afraid of the teasing. So for 2 years I lived in fear. Yet that day, it didn't matter. I was ready. Shorts, heart and mind. I no sooner got to the starting line before I heard the loud whispers, 'Gross! How fat! How ugly!' But I blocked it out. Then the coach yelled, 'Ready, set, go!' I jetted out of there like a jet airplane, faster than anyone for the first 20 feet. I didn't know much about pacing then, but it was okay because I was determined to finish first. As we came around the first of 4 laps, there were students all over the track. By the end of the second lap, many of the students had already quit. They had given up and were on the ground gasping for air. As I started the third lap, only a few of my classmates were left on the track and I began limping. By the time I hit the fourth lap, I was alone. Then it hit me. I realized that nobody had given up. Instead, everybody had already finished. As I ran that last lap, I cried. I realized that every boy and girl in my class had beat me. And 12 minutes and 42 seconds after starting, I crossed the finish line. I fell to the ground and shed oceans of tears. I was so embarrassed. Suddenly, my coach ran up to me and he picked me up, yelling, 'You did it, Manuel. You finished, son. You finished.' He looked me straight in the eye, waving a piece of paper in his hand. It was my goal for the day, which I had forgotten. I had given it to him before class. He read it aloud for everyone. I had written, 'I, Manuel Diotte, will finish the mile run tomorrow, come what may. No pain or frustration will stop me, for I am more than capable of finishing, and with God as my strength, I will finish. Signed, Manuel Diotte, with a smiley face inside of the D as I always sign my name.' My heart lifted, my tears went away, and I had a smile on my face as if I'd eaten a banana sideways. My classmates applauded and gave me my first standing ovation. It was then I realized winning isn't always finishing first. Sometimes winning is just finishing. Finish the task. She's not done just because Haman's gone. She isn't done. They've still got some miles to cover here. Her people are all still going to die unless they can change this law. Verse 7. Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew. I like that they call him that. Mordecai the Jew. Wouldn't that be cool if people knew you as Richard the Christian? That'd be really Bob the Christian. I would like that. He's called Mordecai the Jew. Then the king said, "Indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows, which he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring. For whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke." Now, there's something in this that we've got to remember. The laws of the Medes and the Persians, we got this way back in the book of Daniel. That's one of the unique things of the Persian kingdom in those days. Once a law is written, it can't be overturned. Once a king signs a law, that's it. They can't just say, well, we take Haman's law and we're tearing it up. Can't do it. Instead, what they've got to do is come up with a new legislation that allows the first law to stay, but counterbalances it with something new. And so they're going to need to write a new law, and he's going to ask Esther and Mordecai to take care of this. Working within the system, Ahasuerus doesn't ignore the system of laws that his empire has, his nation has. And he has Esther work within the system to amend the laws. We may get quite discouraged with the direction our nation is heading. Because it's going downhill. It is. Even as I was writing this, it was just hilarious. I got a text alert or a thing on my phone. I subscribe to the text alerts from USA Today. And I'm writing, I'm in this very section. I was talking about abortion, immorality, drugs. And I was going to talk about it's all going downhill fast. And I get a text thing from USA saying that the IRS has decided they're going to accept same-sex marriage on taxes now, that you now can claim dependents or whatever it is. Talk to my wife. She's a tax person. I'm not a tax person. And it just was hilarious to think that I'm at this very section. You know, every day we're going a little lower. We're changing our minds about things, about what's right and what's wrong. My new history book I'm reading about Harry S. Truman. And it's interesting. He was quite a moral man. And I wonder what Harry S. Truman would say about some of the stuff that his nation has gotten into. Absolutely, absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. But gang, we still have the ability, as much as you might be discouraged about what happens in Washington or Sacramento, you and I still have the ability to work within the system. We still live in a country that is controlled by the voters. And we can choose to vote for moral candidates. We can. We can choose to do that. Don't drop out of the voting system. Don't say, well, it's just going, it's a ship sinking. I'm not even bothered to vote. Shame on you. Don't you dare do that. Make sure that you're registered to vote and do your homework and vote the best that you can. We can change within this. Now, you might say, but yeah, but we don't have enough people to make the change. Ah, and that's the point. So how do you get people to vote for what you think needs to happen for our nation to change? That, my friends, is why we need to pray and work towards revival. Not for republicanism, revival. When the hearts and the minds of our nation are changed to know God and to follow God, you don't have to tell people what the right thing is to vote for. They'll get it. They'll get it. God help us. At the moment, we are still able to work within the system. Wouldn't it be cool if there was some good Christian men and women who got into politics? I wouldn't wish it on anybody. I wouldn't, you know. I absolutely wouldn't. That's one of the things I'm reading about with Harry Truman. He's just gotten into politics. And he hates it, and he loves it. He loves serving his people. He loves doing the right thing. But he hates the corruption that he sees all around him in the 20s and the 30s, early 30s right now. Interesting. Verse 9. So the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is in the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the princes, and the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in his own script, to every people in his own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. I want to point out one thing. This new thing is going to be written in the third month. The third month. Now follow this. Haman's death decree went out on the 13th day of the first month. That's when they first issued the death decree, on the first month. Don't worry about what day of the month. Just think about the months for now. I believe that it's possible that Esther takes her first steps in the second month. Why do I come to that conclusion? I don't know if you recall in chapter 4, verse 11, where she says, "Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. What 30 days? What if it's the 30 days since the death decree? So that puts her into the second month. And then she asks everybody to fast and pray for 3 days. And then she starts the sequence of events where within a couple of days, Haman's dead and gone. Are you following me? And that happens in the second month. And so now we're in the third month when this thing is now being written. That's why I said that they haven't been together for a while when he has to hand out the golden scepter again, remember? Because the last time he saw her was at month two, and we're now in month three. Did that make sense to you? And the death day is still off 9 months in the future. It's not till the 12th month. So there is time to get this propagated, to get the translations done so that everybody gets aware of what's happening. And they are to do all according to what Mordecai commands. In other words, Mordecai is the one who gets to draft the new law. Verse 10, "And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses, bred from swift steeds." They've got the latest DSL lines set up, you know, and stuff. This is, "By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions on one day in all the king's on all the provinces of King Ahasuerus on the 13th day of the 12th month." That's the original death day, which is the month of Adar. "A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree to in every province and published for all people, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies." So that's how they're going to get around Haman's decree. It still stands, where you can kill a Jew if you want to kill a Jew. But we're going to let the Jews kill you as well. And in fact, we're not going to hurt them at all if they kill you. There's going to be no charges filed if you were killed by a Jew because you were going to kill them. That's how they're going to get around this law. Verse 14, "The couriers who rode on royal horses went out, hastened and pressed on by the king's command. And the decree was issued in Shushan, the citadel." That's the capital city. That's where most of this action is taking place, is in Shushan. That's where Mordecai, the king, and Esther are. "So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light, gladness, joy, and honor." They'd been under a death sentence. Just, you know, a month before, they were all figuring that they were all going to be put to death, and there wasn't a thing anybody could do about it. And now they can actually protect themselves and not be penalized. They've been under a death sentence, and now they have hope. It's kind of like when you realized that you were a sinner, condemned to death, just like I was. We were all sinners condemned because we are sinners, and the penalty for our sin is death. And yet God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him would not perish, but have everlasting life. kind of the response to that, whether you get it or not, is whether you taste that light and gladness and joy and honor. Because God loves you. And God wants you out of the death sentence. We no longer face eternal separation from God. When we trust in Christ, we are set free. Verse 17. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews because fear of the Jews fell on them. Isn't that a hoot? Instead of going to be, they're all going to die, everybody wants to become a Jew. That's pretty cool. It's not exactly like a harvest crusade, you know, because these people want to become Jews so they don't get killed. And how did you become a Jew? Well, you get circumcised. It's this little surgical procedure for all the gentlemen in the room. Not a very comfortable one. And then some people were lining up, signing up for freak circumcision. You come and be a Jew. Yeah, it's very good. There is a little principle here, gang. Witness through crisis. God's people have survived a crisis. And as a result, people are turning to God. How you respond to tough times will impact the lives of people around you. And I know some of you are going through tough times. I know that. How you manage those waters can affect the people around you. Judy Anderson, whose husband is the West Africa director of the World Relief Corporation, grew up as a daughter of missionaries in Zaire. As a little girl, she went to a day-long rally celebrating the 100th anniversary of Christian missionaries coming to that part of Zaire. After a full day of long speeches and music, an old man came before the crowd and insisted that he be allowed to speak. He said he soon would die and that he alone had some important information, and if he did not speak, that information would go with him to his grave. He explained that when the Christian missionaries first came, his people thought the missionaries were strange and their message unusual. The tribal leaders decided to test the missionaries by slowly poisoning them to death. Over a period of months and years, missionary children died one by one. Then the old man said this. He said, "It was as we watched how they died that we decided we wanted to live as Christians." Paul writes it this way. We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God, not from ourselves. We are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. Through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. Yes, we live under constant danger of death because we serve Jesus so that the life of Jesus will be evident in our dying bodies. So we live in the face of death, but this has resulted in eternal life. For you, there's a witness through your life when you go through difficulties, and how you manage those waters will affect the people around you. There are people that are watching you, and they aren't watching to see how blessed you are. They aren't watching to see how your paycheck is multiplying. They're watching to see how you go through tough times just like they do. And it's when you handle it differently than them, they pay attention. That's when they see Jesus. Chapter 9. Oh, man, I got to hurry. I got two chapters and I only got 10 minutes. In the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command. Here we are, it's death day. And his decree to be executed on the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them. The opposite occurred in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could withstand them because fear of them fell on all the people. And all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's palace, and his fame spread through all the provinces. For this man Mordecai became increasingly prominent. Thus the Jews defeated all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, with slaughter and destruction, and they did what they pleased with those who hated them. Now, that's not the way we're supposed to handle our enemies. Just make sure we got that clear. Okay, you don't go swinging the swords and cutting their heads off. We have a little different marching orders, by the way. Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Just make sure you got that clear when we talk about, you know, the Jews having victory over their enemies and killing them all and stuff like that. That didn't work for you. Our rule is to love our enemies and to pray for them. Verse 6, and in Shushan, the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. And Parshandatha, Dalphon, Aspatha, Poratha, Dalia, Ardatha, Pamarmash, Dorshtibud. Yeah, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha. If anybody else wants to read it, you can. The enemy of the Jews, they killed the 10 sons, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. So see, they did have the ability to kill these people and take all their stuff, but they didn't, because they weren't in this. They weren't in this for the money. They were in this to save their own lives. And on that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan, the citadel, was brought to the king. He gets a tally of it. And the king said to Queen Esther, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the citadel and 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? What now is your petition? It shall be granted to you. Or what is your request? It shall be done. Now, there's no mention here of the golden scepter. So he has come to her this time. I thought that's pretty cool. I just want to straighten it out. She comes to him. Then Esther said, if it pleases the king, let it be granted that the Jews who are in Shushan do again tomorrow according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows. Apparently she's heard that there are more guys out there who are just waiting to kill the Jews. So the king commanded this to be done. The decree was issued in Shushan, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons. Keep in mind, the hanging of the sons, this is not by the neck rope thing that you might be thinking. Hanging in these days, the body's already dead. They're hanging it up on a pike or even have it pierced by a spike on the top. They're displaying a dead body. So they've already killed these men, and now they're putting them out on public display. That's what this is talking about with hanging. And the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men in Shushan, and they did not lay a hand on the plunder. So this is in addition to the 500s. The remainder of the king of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives, had rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. Look, anti-Semitism is nothing new. There's 75,000 people who were out to get them. It's amazing. This was the 13th day of the month of Adar, and the 14th month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. So the people outside of Shushan, they got rid of their enemies in one day, and the next day they rested. People in Shushan did differently. They fought against their enemies the first day. They fought a second day, and they rested and had their party on the third day. Verse 18, but the Jews who were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day as well as on the 14th and on the 15th of the month. They rested, made it a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages who dwelt in the unwalled towns celebrated the 14th day of the month at Adar with gladness and feasting as a holiday and sending presents to one another, Hallmark cards and all that kind of stuff. And Mordecai even probably posted on people's Facebook pages, all this kind of stuff, you know. Mordecai wrote these things and sent letters to all the Jews near and far who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to establish among them that they should celebrate yearly the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar as the Jews on which the Jews, as the days on which the Jews had rested from their enemies, as the month which was turned from sorrow to joy for them and from mourning to a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and joy, sending presents to one another and gifts to the poor. I just like that phrase. They turned it from sorrow to joy. And I'm going to skip this whole thing, mostly because I just need to get, I need to get to the end. Let me just say this. This is what the Lord is all about. He's the one who turns sorrow into joy. And whatever dark days you're facing, He can turn it around. He can take you through. He will get you through. He will. Homework, read Isaiah 61, the first three verses. This is what Jesus reads in the synagogue at Capernaum when he first shows up. And it's all about turning mourning into gladness. But I'm not going to, we're not going to read that. And I'm not going to, we're not going to watch that. And we're going to, Psalm 126 says, those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. God turns sorrow to joy. Verse 23, so the Jews accepted the custom which they had begun as Mordecai had written to them, because Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate and cast poor, that is the lot, to consume them and destroy them. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letter that this wicked plot which Haman had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his son should be hanged in the gallows. We're just summing up everything we just read. Here's the deal. The Jews outside of Shushan, we're going to see two groups of people. The people that were outside of the capital city, they fought on the 13th of the month, and they partied on the 14th of the month. You follow that? The Jews who lived inside Shushan, remember they got that extra day to fight. So they fought on the 13th, they fought on the 14th, and they had their party on the 15th. You following me in this? So this is going to be woven into the tradition of this feast we call Purim. Today, most places around the world, most Jews around the world, will celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar. Now, where that falls into our American Gregorian calendar, I do not know. I still cannot figure out those calculations. You have to pull out a Jewish calendar for that. But the way the tradition goes among Jews, that in cities that are walled cities, like Shushan, those Jews will celebrate Purim on the 15th. And from what I found out, there's only one city that they consider that qualifies for that, and that's the city of Jerusalem. Everywhere else in the world, the Jews will celebrate Purim on the 14th, but the Jews in Jerusalem will celebrate on the 15th, following the pattern of the actual thing, where everybody out in the countryside celebrated on the 14th because they only had one day to fight. And then the ones in the city did the next day. So did you follow all that? So now you can figure out the Purim thing, how that all works. Aren't you glad you came to church tonight? Okay, verse 26. So these days are called Purim, that's plural, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter that they had concerning this matter and what had happened to them. Pur is, that means lot. It's like casting lots is like casting dice. It's like the way you figure things. It's the way you kind of guess, well, if we roll a six, then we'll do it, you know, something like that. Well, this refers to how Haman and his friends, evil Haman, had figured out the date in the first place was by doing their little magic sorceries, tossing their dice and waving their hands, and that's how they came up with that date in the very first place. That's back in chapter 3, verse 27. The Jews established and imposed it upon themselves that their descendants and all who would join them, that without fail they would celebrate these 2 days every year according to the written instructions and according to the prescribed time, that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, every city, that these days of Purim should not fail to be observed among the Jews, and that the memory of them should not perish among their descendants. The Feast of Purim, these are the kinds of things that will go into the celebration of Purim among the Jews. They will read the book of Esther, the entire book of Esther. And the book of Esther is a part of writings that is called the Megillah. The Megillah. By the way, when they read the entire book of Esther, they are reading the whole Megillah. Has anybody heard that phrase before? Okay, one, two of us. Oh my gosh, oi, three. Oy vey, I read the whole Megillah. He finished the whole Megillah. I found a website and somebody said, did they name that after, is that come after Megillah Gorilla? You know, from the 1960s? Is that where they get it? No. It comes from the Jewish Megillah talking about these scriptures, and the Jews reading the entire book of Esther was reading the whole Megillah. How about that? Aren't you just glad you came to church? Women are always present in this celebration as opposed to some others where women might not participate. Why are women always present in the celebration of Purim? Anybody want to guess? Because of Esther. It ain't going nowhere without that girl. She's the one who delivered her people. She's the hero of this story. Another part of it is that when they read the Megillah, every time the name Haman is mentioned, we could call it booing, but I just did that as a shortening. They actually call it blotting out his name. It comes from Deuteronomy 25:19, where it talks about blotting out any remembrance of Amalek. But whenever they read his name, they're all equipped with noisemakers, and they all make noise. Click, 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 click. And that's part of the fun. That's part of the fun, you know, and it keeps everybody. That's probably the pastor's trick of keeping everybody involved while he's reading this long whole Megillah, is that they're all waiting because it's 54 times Haman's name shows up. And every time, and then came Haman, because they're trying to blow. On we go. There's a lot of food. Charity is a part of it. People give food to one another, and they give gifts to the poor. Each adult, I like this. I like this. This is the way to do a potluck. Each adult was to bring, I just lost my every guy, was to bring two kinds of foods to another person. So you bring twice as much as anybody can eat, and you bring two different kinds of foods. That's the way you do potluck, you know. That's why we do when we have our baptism, we ask you to bring a main dish and either a dessert or a main dish and a salad. And that way, everybody's got a ton of food. It's just the right thing to do. Aren't you getting hungry? I can hardly wait for the baptism. It's one of the best potlucks of the year. And they also are supposed to give donations to poor people. Traditional foods include pastries. Those are called Haman's ears. They have things that are decorated like Esther and Mordecai and Haman. And they have fried pastries and all kinds. I mean, you see the stuff that they do on Purim. It's awesome. I think we were in one of our Israel trips. We were in Israel during Purim. It was a hoot. It was awesome. And it's a time of costumes and music. It's the day that the kids and the adults, they'll dress up in costumes. Not completely like Halloween. They're not dressing up like ghosts and goblins, but they dress up like Esther and Haman and Mordecai. And there's a lot of music involved. Remembering. That's what this is all about. They're setting up this whole feast to remember what God did. You know, some of us have actually been through some good things, been through some victories. And sometimes we forget what God has done in our lives. And we'll face a difficult thing, and we need to remember God's faithful. He'll get you through. He'll get you through. Remembering doesn't have to be hard. Sometimes it can be fun. The Jews have a lot of fun remembering this victory in Esther. It's not a bad idea every once in a while to remember when. To remember when God did these things, and I will skip this next thing because I don't have time. Yeah, verse 29. Okay, there we go. And Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail, with Mordecai the Jew. I'm sorry, I'm out of practice. I'm already 2 minutes over. She wrote with full authority to confirm the second letter about Purim Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews, to the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus, with words of peace and truth to confirm these days of Purim at their appointed time, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had prescribed for them, and as they decreed for themselves and their descendants concerning matters of their fasting and lamenting. So the decree of Esther concerning these matters of Purim, she confirmed these matters, and it was written in a book. And part of it, just as a real quick thing, is that part of this involved an instruction about fasting, lamenting. Because, gang, that's how the deliverance came. It all started because she said, we need to fast. Gang, you need to pray for me before I talk to the king. In verse 1 of chapter 10, King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land and on the islands of the sea. Now, why they have to stop and talk about taxes, I have no idea. I don't get that. But verse 2, now all the acts of his power and might and the account of the greatness of Mordecai, which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the king, Mordecai the Jew, was second to King Ahasuerus and was great among the Jews as well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people and speaking peace to all his countrymen. Now, he doesn't last. He's not prime minister forever and ever. Some of the scholars have figured out that by the historic records, that is probably about 8 years that he stays in office, because in 8 years, another man will become known as the head counselor. But that's another story. And we are done. Let's stand and pray.